Okay, testing. Can you hear me in the back? We're good? All right, I'm very excited. How's everyone doing this morning?
Great.
All right, we've got an amazing show, a show I've been waiting for literally years. We've got some of the most important people in the cloud space at Microsoft come down from Corp today. So you could not be in a better place on Earth today than here to learn about the Azure technologies. So my name's Bruno. Some of you may recognize me from the .NET community. I'm your local evangelist. I've got my contact information here. I do my best to respond to all emails. I blog extensively. I just finished a 10-part blog on creating a RESTful service, consuming data from iPhone, from Android, from Windows Phone 7. Hey, Greg. See a lot of familiar faces. I'm excited to be here. We got people from the Lawrence Livermore Labs. We've got MVPs in the house. We got just a great show today. Just by way of internet, notice there's free guest access today. So there's also a power supply right by your seat, which is an awesome feature of this room. The only caveat is the beverages can't be brought in here. We're trying to preserve the excellent cleanliness of this room. So I'm just going to jump right in here and introduce people, talk about the schedule real quickly. So we've got a very busy day. I'm going to try to be as brief as possible. As you can see here, we end about 4:30. We're going to kick things off with a little bit about what's new in the platform. We may even get some insights from the team themselves about new features coming down the pike, new technologies being introduced. It is a very dynamic offering. Things are being added all the time. Things are going into beta, into CTP, ongoing basis. Does anyone know when the latest Windows Azure Platform Training Kit was released? Just a couple days ago. We got an October release already. So the cadence is kind of accelerating on the kit. The actual creators of the kit are here today speaking, so there's no better place to be to learn about Azure. What else can I tell you about the topics? If you talk about storage, we've just lowered prices on storage yet again. There's many options for storage here. There's the relational capabilities we're offering. There's the notion of tables, blobs, and queues. How much data can a table object store using the Azure Table Service? Billions of rows. They automatically scale across multiple storage nodes. We got blob storage, we got queues, we've got just an amazing array of storage options. So we want to talk to you about what is scalable, what is less scalable, how do you overcome scaling challenges. That's part of today's talk. Security, replication, how many copies are there in case one goes down? Can you replicate across data centers? How exactly does that work? We do have a mic, so if you do have a question, we're going to ask you to speak into the mic. This is being simulcast, so we want the questions to be heard clearly by other listeners. We break into session three, and we're getting more into the relational story here with SQL Azure. There's a lot of, I got to be careful about what's public, what's not here, but this is a very fast-moving technology. It's basically taking your on-premise database, there's some caveats, and moving it into the cloud. I've been speaking about this for a couple years now. There's some great tools to kind of migrate. Robin, one of our MVPs, is here. She's going to talk to you at the end of today. She's done a huge migration to SQL Azure. She has amazing numbers of how much money it saved her company. So she's in the back. She's going to talk to us about this end of the day. So there's a bunch of tools and technologies about how you do this migration, everything from the SQL Azure Migration Wizard, doing bulk copy, bulk imports. A lot of options here, and maybe some tricks, some things to think about before and as you do the migration effort. Moving on to the later in the afternoon, by now you're probably getting sleepy, but it's just in time because we're going to talk about ACS. Most of us who are, how many of you here actually own public-facing web properties that you need to kind of maintain allegiance to? A few of you. So most of you want to try to keep as many people glued to your site as possible. One of the ways to do that is not requiring them to provide and establish a new identity. Maybe that you want them to leverage Facebook, Google, LiveID. All these identity providers could be leveraged inside of your web apps without any programming. Pretty much a configuration wizard type approach. So this would allow you to retain users without forcing them yet again to establish new identity. And there's all types of other applications with the Access Control Service, integrating Active Directory in your own company to the cloud, bridging those two worlds. And there's also a whole training kit onto itself called the Windows Identity Foundation Training Kit, which of course talks about Windows Identity. So just be aware that this part of the afternoon is a lot about providing secure access to your cloud-based or on-premise resources, and maybe bridging those two worlds. Moving on a little bit later, we're going to talk about different scenarios where you might be using Azure, everything from SharePoint, high-performance computing, games, leaderboards. There's a lot of options here. It's important to really think about how you're going to use the technology in real-world settings. And so that's what this session is going to be about, kind of towards the afternoon. And finally, towards the end of the day, I'm going to bring on stage Neil McKenzie and Robin Shahan. These are local MVPs. They speak frequently at my meetup, the Azure Developers Meetup in San Francisco. They're actually both of them are next on the queue there to speak. And Robin is very experienced with respect to SQL Azure, and she's been an MVP for a number of years. And Neil McKenzie just authored a book on the cloud. You'll also see his name all over the forums and answering questions. The guy's a magician. Every time I ask a question, no matter how obscure, he has some kind of great answer. So I'm excited to have both of them cap off our day. They may be familiar to many of you. Let's also talk a little bit about the weekend. How many of you hope to come tomorrow? Because this is the hands-on portion. Thank you for going. You should come. That's the best part. This is where you get hands-on experience with the platform. I'll be on hand. The MVPs will all be here to help you get set up and get up and running. It's very important that you actually take the lessons today and apply them tomorrow. So we end tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I apologize for taking one of your weekend days, but it's a good investment. I tell folks, when you learn the Azure platform, it's learning about everything. It's not just learning about cloud, because you've got HTML5 that can be integrated into cloud. You've got MVC, ASP.NET, thick clients, thin clients, Silverlight media streaming services could be used here. We're talking about all the phone offerings, not just the Microsoft ones, being able to leverage the cloud. So the cloud is so all-encompassing. It just makes you a better developer in general. It's just so encompassing when you think about what the cloud can do. So I think this is an awesome opportunity. I wouldn't want to discount the value of today's speakers, but this is very valuable to be here tomorrow. I really strongly encourage you to make the time. So I'm very excited to have James in the house. He's going to kick things off. He has been involved in the cloud since the very beginning. He's kind of in charge of the Windows Azure Platform Training Kit, if I'm not mistaken. And this is, to me, the single one best place to go to learn about the cloud. If you had to choose one thing to do, it would be download the Platform Training Kit. And then buy Neil's book after that. So I think this is an awesome, it's 300 megabytes. It's got everything in PowerPoints, Word documents, step-by-step, source code. Everything is in this kit. It's your one-stop shopping. Wade Wegner, another amazing technologist here in the house today. In fact, he just announced the October release of the training kit. So there's an excellent cadence to this kit. It's coming out frequently. It's always being enhanced to reflect the evolution of the platform. Wade's done a lot of great work, particularly in the mobile space. He's got on GitHub, he's got stuff on iPhone, on Android, iPad. All that stuff is part of a download you can get. It's on my blog as well. You can go find out exactly where to get his material. So Wade's in the house as well. He's on James' team, and it's awesome that he's here as well. Roger is in the house as well, Philadelphian. He is the database guy, so he is going to talk to you today, obviously, about databases, I believe. And so I met him this morning, really fun guy from the East Coast and very energetic, very passionate about this. Excited that he's here as well to talk to us about database stuff. Nick is over here. I was trying to construct some of these bios last night, and I found out this guy writes software for helicopters. So if you have any helicopter software questions, this is the place to be. He did some stuff for the Tiger helicopter. He's also a technologist, and you can see he's talking about push notification here. which means, as you probably know, you're not requesting data from the cloud, but the cloud is sending data when it's ready. For example, a stock market application, instead of you saying, what's the latest stock price, the cloud's pushing this to your devices as the prices get updated. So again, this is another speaker today I think I'm excited to see on site. Finally, Robin, I just mentioned her. She's a local MVP. She's really well known. Many of you have probably seen her speak. She has very much direct hands-on experience with SQL Azure. I think that's the value she really brings here. She's going to share her experience in migrating all of her infrastructure to the cloud. And I can't even believe, you'll have to ask her yourself about what the number, the percentage savings her company is experiencing. We didn't pay her to say this, just ask her. She works for Goldmail, and she'll go on record to tell you what a huge savings it was for her company to do this. She's going to be speaking at the Bay Area .NET user group that I started in San Francisco coming up. So I'm very excited to see her today. Neil, when I asked Neil for a bio, he gave me this thing about being Scottish, how humble he is. I thought it was very cute. Basically, he didn't want to talk about himself, so I put his stuff here anyway because Neil is awesome. He's all over the forums answering all kinds of questions. He just came out with this awesome book. So another amazing resource to have on site here today towards the end of the day. So please stick around till the end. We've got two MVPs. Very briefly about myself, there's my Azure meetup. Basically, I'm a blogger, speaker, many familiar faces here today. So a busy guy. There's no rest for an evangelist. We're always trying to kind of keep up and keep you guys in the loop. The most important thing to me is this little guy just turned 14 months. Last night in the hotel room, he took 5 steps. So I can't wait. Maybe he's walking by today. In fact, he was at the Azure Code Camp. How many of you, not the Azure, but the Silicon Valley Code Camp. How many of you went to that? A good 40% of you. So yeah, he went to his first Code Camp. So I'm pretty excited. He's already hitting my keyboard anytime he can. So thank you. I'm going to bring James up. I made it under 15 minutes. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day. Enjoy it. It's a great opportunity today.
Great. Thanks, Bruno. Just give me 1 second here. Let me switch over our projector input, and then I'll get started. Well, good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Well, I'm excited to be here, and as Bruno mentioned, we have a great lineup of sessions for you today with a lot of folks from both Redmond as well as some of the other evangelists from the U.S. as well. We're really excited to go through this session today, this overall camp event with you today. As Bruno mentioned, this is kind of the kickoff for a lot of these Windows Azure camps we're going to be running worldwide. I think the last count is 85 events, and so this is the first time that we'll be going through some of these presentations, showing some of these demos with you. I mean, this camp is a little unique in that we're spending 2 days here, where the second day is that nice hands-on time. So if you come back tomorrow, if you have an application scenario that you want to work on, it's a great opportunity to get some feedback and input on that application scenario or get started building your application. We'll also have the hands-on labs that you can actually go through and start running through with some guidance and some proctors as well. So that's a great opportunity as well. As Bruno mentioned, I lead the Azure Evangelism team for Microsoft. And basically what that means is I have a team of technical evangelists that focus on a variety of the Windows Azure platform services. And what we do is not only build some of the content, like the hands-on labs and so forth that Bruno mentioned, but we often go and build a lot of the samples and the demos and other resources that you see out there in the community. And so we're eager as well to get your feedback through the next 2 days on where are some of the challenges you have in building cloud apps. How can we make that easier, both from a tooling standpoint, from an SDK standpoint, and just how can the services evolve as well to continue to add more and more functionality. I've been involved in the cloud space for about 4 years now, going back to the early days before there was no Windows Azure platform. When we threw around code names like Sitka and Zurich, and even code names like Red Dog. And it's been an interesting ride to see how these services have come together. As Bruno mentioned, we're on a very, very fast pace with the Windows Azure platform. We're constantly pushing out new updates to some of the core services that are out there, introducing new services, and lighting up the tooling with new SDKs and new Visual Studio extensions as well. And so there's a lot of things that we're just releasing almost on a daily basis, it seems like. And so we're going to cover some of those new things over the course of the day as well. So what I want to do in this session is really kind of start from the ground level and talk about how you get started with Windows Azure. And I imagine many of you have probably looked at some of the content that's out there on the web and maybe read some different articles about the cloud and Azure. And they get into all the speak about platform as a service and infrastructure as a service and private clouds and public clouds. We're not going to do any of that today. Instead, what we're going to focus on is just a few core things. What I want to do is just first, very quickly, just answer a question of what is Windows Azure and what does it mean for you to build applications in the cloud. The second thing I want to do is just show you how you can quickly get started building an application. So through that, we'll start seeing some of the different concepts, start learning some of the terminology, see some of the mechanics of building an app. And from there, we'll kind of dive into a few of those concepts that you really need to know to start building applications. Overall, if we were going to do a full training event on the overall Azure platform, we would probably be here for 4 or 5 days. I know none of us can afford that time. Instead, what we want to do is just jump quickly in to the core things that you need to know, introduce a few other concepts, and point you to resources where you can learn more. And of course, we'll be here tomorrow to provide some more assistance as well. So with that, what is Windows Azure? You can really think about Windows Azure as being a comprehensive set of different services you would go and consume in the cloud. And we often talk about compute, and I'll drill into compute primarily as part of this, the concept of taking your code and having the ability to run your code in Microsoft's data centers. But there's also a collection of additional services that you could consume through just standard, you know, REST-based protocol through HTTP and start composing as part of your application. What we also really built out as part of the Windows Azure platform is the ability to go and provide some automated application management for you. If you've been building, I saw a few hands in here, you know, public websites is an example. You're familiar with the challenges of how do I deploy that website? How do I deploy it across multiple servers? How do I manage configuration? Do I have all the necessary infrastructure in place so that my site is participating in the load balancer? How am I handling failover and scalability? And then those issues just get even further compounded when you start thinking about geo-based applications. What you'll see across Windows Azure platform is what we've tried to do is really abstract you from a lot of that complexity and allow you to just focus on the application. And of course, you'll see some different services as well, things for like storage, like access control. These services that, of course, you can go use when you're running code in Windows Azure, the services you can use if you're running your code in your own data center or with a hosting provider or maybe even with another cloud provider. There are 5 key benefits that we think about when we look at the Azure platform relative to using an on-premises-based solution or a traditional kind of hosting solution. One of the key benefits I mentioned is just that abstraction as well as flexibility, where I can get out of the mode of having to install and manage updates to an underlying operating system, having to configure my application across multiple instances, and be really up-level what I'm doing by allowing the cloud to give me some of that capability automatically. You'll see the Windows Azure platform is really designed for scalability and high availability from the beginning. So we allow you to just define the number of machine instances you want to go and run and manage those machine instances for you. Automatically register those machine instances in a load balancer, track the status and health of those instances, and even allow updates to occur automatically with the Windows Azure environment as well. We focus a lot on just making sure we have an open and interoperable platform. And what I mean by that is it actually takes a couple of different forms. One form is allowing you to go and run your code using your frameworks out in the Windows Azure environment, but also having the ability to go consume some of the services from code that you may have written in PHP, Java, or other languages as well. We focus a lot on mix and match kind of model, where you don't have to go and say, I have to invest all this time and energy in taking on the entire platform. Instead, very oftentimes, We see organizations and customers that are saying, you know what, I just want to start with that access control service. I just want to add authentication in my iOS application. And then maybe I'll use compute at some point later. So really design these things to allow you to mix and match and compose them together as well. And a consumption-based based pricing model is absolutely key in the cloud. The ability for you to say, you know what, right now I only need 2 machine instances in 1 data center. But you know what, in a couple weeks, I may actually want 50 across 3 data centers. It allows you to only pay for those resources that you actually use. And so those are some of the key benefits and the principles we've applied for the Windows Azure platform. So the scenarios that come up often when we've talked with developers over the last few years, one is just scalability. You know, I'm building a website, I'm building that next application, and I expect this thing to grow fast. I expect lots of users, and I need to be able to go and respond to those user demands. We see this a lot with even like the marketing-based, campaign-based websites as an example. But there's also other kinds of situations where people want those on-demand resources. You know, you think about month-end kind of processes where I have some kind of workload, some kind of app, needs to wake up, run for a few hours at the end of a month, and you know what? In between that time, I don't need those resources. And those are great scenarios we see for the cloud as well. Availability and fault tolerance is also a key thing we continue to see coming up. As more and more people think about, you know, providing backends that power mobile devices, as an example, as you think about making sure that those websites and those applications are highly available in multiple regions worldwide, that's really difficult to do in a traditional model, and that's where we see Azure stepping in, providing a lot of benefits. So you see some of the scenarios that we see commonly used for on the Azure platform. We'll actually touch on a bunch of these scenarios later in the day and talk about how you would compose some of the various services to, for example, build a social game or build a device application. So we dive into the platform a little bit. Let's talk about some of the core services. There are 3 core services that you really need to know about in order to start building applications in Windows Azure platform. The first one is compute. And compute is simply our nice simple term for allowing you to run your code within Microsoft data centers. Allow you to run your code within machine instances that we allocate for you, where you can go run a variety of different frameworks and use a variety of different languages for that code. So, you know, .NET-based applications, WCF services, ASP.NET apps, PHP applications, or even Java applications as an example, running those out in Windows Azure environment. The second core service is storage. And, you know, storage, there's a variety of different models that we expose for providing the ability to store your data. So you can think of storage as taking the form of, you know, data might be blobs, for example, you know, large, you know, files, could be video files, images, other kinds of content I want to store out in the cloud using a highly scalable service. Maybe some name value, kind of unstructured data that you want to go and you want to store as well, kind of using a NoSQL model, or even queues where you have data persisted as you're transferring data across different tiers of your application. And we'll focus on storage a little bit later today as well. And then, of course, the database. It's, you know, it's really hard to go build a real app without having a database. And so that's why we've taken the assets we have with SQL Server and we've provided those out in the cloud. And Roger will spend a lot more time talking about SQL Azure Database later today. But one of the key things to really understand, and you'll see this as a guiding principle for all the services we're exposing, is that we're fundamentally trying to focus on how do we provide things as a service as opposed to just taking software and running it in a virtual machine that you have to maintain and you have to manage. And so what you'll see with SQL Azure is the ability for me to easily go up and say, I want to create a new logical environment or a logical server, then assign that to a specific data center. I then want to just go create databases. No point do you have to remote into a machine, configure SQL Server at that level, install SQL Server, patch it, or update it. It's really delivered as a service that you can consume. You'll see that as a guiding principle as we move forward, too. So in this session, I want to focus primarily on compute and drill in some scenarios. The best way I've found to do that is to actually just quickly show you a very simple demo. So let me go ahead and just flip over here in Visual Studio 2010 Web Developer. Actually, let me just launch another instance of that here. And And what I'm going to do here in Visual Web Developer 2010 Express is actually just create a new Windows Azure application. So let me go ahead and close that there. And I'll just select New Project here. So I'm running the Web Developer Express version, of course, the free version of Visual Studio that you can go download today. And what I've installed here is the latest Windows Azure SDK and tools, version 1.5 of our SDK in our Visual Studio tools extensions. And as I do that, what you'll notice here is I have this this category in this project template called Windows Azure Project. And let me go ahead and hit OK. So I'll show you kind of the experience from Visual Studio, and I'll talk about some other languages and frameworks here in a little bit as well. So as I create that new project, you'll notice I have a few additional templates I can select from. In this case, I'll just go ahead and use ASP.NET MVC 4. ASP.NET MVC 4 is currently a preview release of our Model View Controller framework. We released this first preview of MVC just a few weeks back in September at the Build Conference. You'll see it actually delivers a number of benefits for building web applications, whether you're building those web apps for Windows Azure or whether you're building those web applications to deploy to your own servers and your own environment. So I'll select that as a template, and you'll notice that with MVC 4, imagine several of you are using MVC here in the room already, but you'll notice that with MVC 4, we actually get the ability to select a few different project templates as well. So I'll select the Internet application as my project template. As I do that, you'll notice that I'm getting this new solution here that contains my MVC, my web application that I want to build out, but it also contains this cloud service application. And fundamentally what this cloud service app does is it captures some of the metadata that I need to describe how I want Windows Azure to deploy and execute my application. We'll drill into that metadata in just a little bit, but that's how you should really think about it. It's just really capturing that metadata about your app. There's no code in that at all. It's just that metadata. And so here you see I have this MVC WebRoll 1 application. What I'm going to do is just a very simple build a very simple app here. I'll just drop into my index view for my home page. And let's just go ahead and change some of this text here. Just call this, Windows Azure Developer Camp SVC. And let me go ahead and add the date here as well. System.date, time.now, toString. I'll just drop that in here. Very simple app. And let me go ahead and just run this. And what you'll notice as I go ahead and run this is that we'll first do a compile and build of our application. But you'll see a dialog pop up here where we're starting up what we refer to as the Windows Azure emulator. One of the things that we've been providing from the beginning around Windows Azure is the ability for you to do local testing, development, debugging before you would deploy your application out to the cloud. And one of the key reasons for delivering that is just so you can quickly iterate on your code without having to always do a round trip out to the cloud. Only do the deployment to the cloud when you're ready to go do that. And so you see here I've pressed F5 or started up the solution. It did that compilation. In the background, Visual Studio launched that emulator environment. And you can see here our web application that's running here on our local host machine, so 127.0.0.1. You notice they're also outputting some of this code here. And so, in fact, if I just go back over here, I could drop in breakpoints here, do a refresh, and you'll notice I'm just going to drop straight into Visual Studio where I can do local debugging as I might be familiar with as a Visual Studio or .NET developer today. So if you're using Visual Studio, and I imagine many of you have probably come to Bruno's events in the past or using VS today, you can see it's just a consistent development experience for how you build those applications for Windows Azure. So let me go ahead and just continue this here. Let me, before I shut this down, let me go ahead and show you the emulator. You see over here, right down here on the right-hand side, that I have this compute and storage emulator that's running down here. If I actually just right-click and say Show Compute Emulator UI, what you'll notice here is I can actually see some of the information about my running local simulated environment. And so what we're doing here is you can see I have one instance. We're simulating what you would have as a virtual machine instance out in the cloud. In fact, if I specified I wanted two machine instances, we would see two of those nodes here. And so I get that kind of local debugging environment, and I can also drill in and see some of the output that's actually coming from that simulated environment as well. So very quick example of how you'd get started with the tools and SDK and so forth. So let me go ahead and stop that now. And so, you know, I've built this application, you know, lots of time invested here and some pretty complex code, I know. And so what I want to do here is take this this really complex app and, just kidding, of course, my sarcasm come across, take this complex app and take that app and deploy it out to the cloud. And so I'll walk through here the kind of the portal experience and how you would do that for the first time. A little bit later, I'll talk about some ways to automate that and how you do it on an ongoing basis for either development or for production kind of setting. So let me go ahead and just right-click here on this this cloud project. And what you'll notice here is I have the ability to just go ahead and do a package. And when we do a package, you can see that we can capture the service configuration. In fact, now with the latest tools release, we can actually have multiple configurations for how we deploy into the cloud. You think about as you get into, you know, real applications, you probably have, you know, test settings that you would use. You probably have development settings you'd use or staging settings. Maybe we're connecting to different databases or different storage systems. So we allow you to specify which collection of service configuration you want to use. And I can also do things like configure remote desktop. So in this case, what I'll do is I'll just select a certificate that I've installed here on my machine. I will also go ahead and just provide a password information. Make sure I type that right. And what that's going to do is it's actually going to enable remote desktop. I'll show you how that works here once we deploy it out to the cloud. And finally, I'll just go ahead and hit package. So again, we're doing the build compilation process, just like we did when we started up our app in the local emulator. The difference in this case is that we're actually going to get what we refer to as a cloud service package. It has a nice extension of CSPKG. We were trying to see how many actual letters we could add on those extensions. But a nice extension of CSPKG, and that's a service package we can go use to deploy out to the cloud. You also notice we have this cloud service configuration, or the CSCFG. And so we'll take a look at that in just a second. So I'm just going to copy this path, this build output path, and I'm going to just navigate out to the Windows Azure platform portal environment. So how many people in this room have already logged into the portal and have a subscription and all that stuff? A few of you. Great. Okay. So for those of you that haven't, this is the this is the portal website where I go and really configure some of the Windows Azure platform services. I would specify how I, for example, want to allow my code to run. I could configure the databases I'm using, storage accounts, and so forth. If you come back tomorrow during the hands-on time, we will give you platform access. We'll be handing out accounts that you can use to very quickly get started, so you don't have to go through the normal sign-up process, provide credit card, or anything like that. We'll just hand all those accounts out so you can just quickly log in and get started building and deploying applications. So I've logged in here using my Live ID, and you'll notice I got this dashboard here. And what I want to do is drill over into hosted services, storage accounts, and CDN. And what you can see here is I have this concept of a subscription. Actually, I have a few of them, which basically is the collection of different Azure platform services I'm using. That's also where we kind of capture billing information, usage information, and so forth. Down below that, I have these different hosted services. And a hosted service effectively is the application my code that I want to run inside of Windows Azure. So let me go ahead and just create a new hosted service here. And let me go ahead and call this Hello Azure Camp SVC. And what I'll do from here is I can actually select the region in which I want to deploy my application. You'll notice that we're today exposing six different data centers you can select from. I'll go ahead and select the North Central Data Center. I can specify the option for where I want to deploy this. Let me go ahead and deploy this into my production environment. Just give it a simple label, call this 1.0 of our Hello World app. And then what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to browse out to that cloud service package. Now that CSPKG contains all of my binaries, so my assemblies that are outputted from Visual Studio, that compilation, contains my configuration information as well as any of my views or other content that I'd want to deploy. So you can think of it as essentially like a zip file that contains all that information. Let me go ahead and specify my configuration file as well. And then finally, let me go ahead and add a cert here. And I'll show you how we're using that in just a minute here. Let me go ahead and just add in a cert. And I'll use this cert for remote desktop. And I have to specify the password again. Make sure I get that right. Okay. So it's doing the validation. So it's actually checking that cloud service configuration information, checking that cloud service package. I'll get a quick warning here. Basically, and I'll specify yes. Basically, from an SLA standpoint, make sure we have high availability. We require at least two instances. So if you're thinking about running an app in a production setting, we require you to have two instances for those production kind of applications. In this case, we're just using one as a default here, so I got a warning on that. So what you see now is that we're actually good. So we require two, and we unfortunately charge for two. So I'll talk a little bit about why we require two in just a little bit. Basically, how we kind of use applications behind this, how we manage applications and instances behind the scenes, and we'll come back to that in just a few minutes. So what you see here in the background is we're actually uploading that cloud service package, uploading that out to Windows Azure, and what's happening here is that Windows Azure is taking in that package and all our binaries and our app. It's taking in the configuration. It's looking at all that information, and it's saying, okay, well, we want to actually deploy that app to X number of instances. By default, it was specified as one here. And it's actually starting up a virtual machine instance in the background for me. Once that virtual machine instance comes up and it's online, it'll then deploy our application into that instance. And because this was a web app, it'll take care of me configuring IIS and all our IIS settings for us. It'll turn on remote desktop for that instance so we can remote into it and further kind of diagnose and look at those instances. And so it's managing all of that for us. In fact, we're running more than one instance. Well, even with one instance, I'm sorry. In one instance, it's actually registering that instance with the load balancer as well. And so this will take around 15 minutes for that instance to get started and to start being registered with the load balancer and start serving up content. I thought it would be fun to, during that 15 instance to kind of bring up the other evangelist, and we can kind of do a singing and dancing routine. But I know what, and I know their skills in that area. So instead, what I'll do here is I'll just go ahead and flip over here to an app that I've previously deployed with a creative name of Hello Azure Camp. In this case, I'm actually running two instances, and you can see those instances in the state right down here below. So I'm running this out in a production environment. I got my two instances. You can see the status and so forth. And what I'll do is I'll just go ahead and browse out to that instance. And see, you can see I'm hitting hello azure camp.cloudapp.net, and the app looks just like my MVC4 app I created earlier, specifying the timestamp and the information there in my simple MVC4 app. So you can browse through this right now. It's up running live and kind of see how this works. But that's kind of the basic process of building, packaging, and deploying application out to the Windows Azure compute environment. Question? The minimum size of a cloud service package?
Yeah.
I'd have to look. It's probably about 2 or 3 meg, would be my guess. I'd have to look on that to be sure. Yeah, it's in the small, single digit megabytes. Yep. Now you can go, you'll see in a little bit, you can go include and package other things with a cloud service package. So imagine that you, for example, had another framework you're using or some third party components that you're using as well for business logic or rules engine or something like that, or even .NET controls. Those are cases where you could package those with your cloud service package as well. And I'll show you some similar examples here in a few minutes. So our app is up there running. This app is actually, because it's two instances, I'm actually coming through load balancer, and those requests are getting routed based on traffic and usage of those instances. So a very simple example of kind of going through the process of building, deploying an application out to the Windows Azure environment. So, sure. I mean, From a load balancer standpoint, we actually have a front-end load balancer. I have a slide on it in a minute, but front-end load balancer that's actually all the incoming internet-based traffic is hitting that load balancer. That load balancer is aware of all the instances that are being used for that given hosted service. So in this case, I'm hitting hello Azure Camp or Windows Azure Camp .cloudapp.net. That's hitting the load balancer. Load balancer sees I have two instances. It's monitoring the availability of those instances, heartbeat kind of model, and then it's routing the traffic into that load balancer. So just a hardware-based load balancing solution. So I don't have to configure it, manage it, or anything. It's just provided as part of the platform. Still, from a sticky session standpoint, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. There are some models for ways you can kind of reroute traffic that hits one instance and you want to bounce it to another. But I can point you to some blogs to kind of describe some different mechanisms for doing that. But it does not maintain sticky sessions by default. So one thing I'll actually show real quick while I'm in there is the ability to connect into one of these environments. So you remember I turned on remote desktop, and I turned it on in Visual Studio, and I also provide my cert when I deploy this application. What that enables is up here on the right-hand side, you see the ability to go do a connect. And if I select this instance and hit connect, what you'll see is I'll get the ability to download a standard remote desktop file, an RDP file, that will allow me to go and just remote in to one of these machines. And the reason why we provide this remote capability is that, you know, there's oftentimes where you want to go and kind of debug, diagnose, understand what's happening inside of one of those Windows Azure instances. And so here you see I'll get a warning here on my connection. Let me go ahead and continue that connection. In just a few seconds here, assuming my network connectivity through our corporate network here, working fine, you'll see I'm actually remoting into this Windows Server 2008 R2 instance. And so what you can see here is that we're just using Windows Server behind the scenes for running these different compute instances. In this case, I'm using Server 2008 R2. You can use 2008 SP2 as well as another option. And because it's Windows Server, I can do things like pull up Event Viewer as an example. I can pull up INET Manager or IIS Manager, so I can actually take a look at my websites. In fact, if I just drilled in here inside of Internet Information Services Manager, you'll actually see in here that we have our Hello Windows Azure Camp site that's actually been registered as a site and all the content that's serving up. So expand sites here, and you can see there's the site that was configured by Windows Azure automatically, some of the binaries, the content, and so forth. So hopefully it gives you a little more insight into what's happening behind the scenes. Yep. I'm sorry? So I turned on remote desktop when I went and created the package in Visual Studio. And what that actually did is it included some of the configuration settings that were required for doing a remote desktop. And that's how it's enabled as well. Great question. Yeah, there actually are some ways you can go do that. One of the things I'll point you to, there's several different ways you could go do that. Using, for example, storage, where you're pushing that content to storage and reading it out from storage from another instance. Using a mounted drive that you mount across those instances. There's what we refer to as a Windows Azure Accelerator for web roles that actually does just that. It synchronizes web content across multiple instances after you do the initial deployment. Is that something to check out? And if you're here tomorrow, happy to walk you through kind of how that works as well. So I got several things to cover here. So let me, if you guys don't mind, hold some of the questions until the end, and we'll get through some of these core concepts that are really important for you to understand. So we created our overall Windows Azure application in Visual Studio. And what we didn't drill into there is there's a couple files provided as part of that cloud service metadata. One of the files we refer to as a service definition. And the service definition is just exactly as it's described by the name. What it does is it actually contains information about the cloud service that we want to go and run, our cloud service. In particular, information about things like what are the network ports that need to be open. what are some of the roles, role types that we want to go and run? And we'll drill into that in just a second as well. The service configuration contains some of the settings that we would change after deployment or before deployment. So things like the actual connection string to a database, the connection information to storage, those are the kinds of things that are captured in the service configuration. Definitions intended to be static after you do the build. Service configuration can change post-build. And then, of course, you had your code, and that all got pulled together as part of the cloud service package. That cloud service package is then deployed out to the Windows Azure compute environment. So let me go ahead and just flip back over to Visual Studio here, Visual Studio Express, and let me show you those files. So here you can see the actual cloud service definition. At least you should be able to see it in the back of the room. Let me go ahead and just crank up the fonts a little bit more. So I suspect that may be, there we go. And so what you can see here is that we actually have a service definition file. It has a concept of the role or the type of workload we want to go and run. And in this case, we're pointing to our MVC web role application. So that means we're actually creating this relationship that says, we want to go and run a web type workload, and here's the code, and here's the content that we serve up inside that workload. What you also see is here we have this cloud service configuration, and this contains a lot of the name value pairs that we'd use for settings. It also contains our number of instances that we'd specify. So remember how I had one instance that's running when I did the deployment? If I wanted to change that to 2 before I did a deployment, or to, you know, or to 10, I could specify that here before I did that initial deployment. This file, the entire contents of this file, can also be changed after a deployment as well. And so there's a couple of the key concepts here to be aware of. So let's talk about services, roles, and instances. As I mentioned, service is kind of a collection for all of the different settings to describe the code that you want to go run inside of Windows Azure. It can contain up to 5 different roles. And a role, it really is the type of workload you want to go run. There are 2 different roles we'll look at today. One role is a web role, so for serving up HTTP-based content, maybe where you want to run an ASP.NET application, a PHP application, maybe a service endpoint itself, like a REST-based service. And there's also what we refer to as worker roles. And these are just 2 different types of roles. By specifying the type of role, you get different functionality there that's included as part of that underlying virtual machine. Okay? You also have the ability to run different types of workloads, different types of code. Effectively, we're using a different template for that virtual machine behind the scenes. And then we have instances. And the instances are really just instantiations of that role, just like they sound. Different virtual machine instances that we can start up based on a role. So let's talk a little bit more about role types. So worker role is really designed to be kind of a general purpose environment for running code or running an executable. How many people in here have built a Windows service in the past? One of those things that runs on control panel, you start and stop. I'm sure many of you have interacted with them before. Really simple, right? There's a start method I can implement. There's a stop method I can implement. There's code that I can run at each of those events, and there's code I can always run in the background. Think of a worker role as being like that. It's really an environment where I can just go run a wide variety of different types of code, and I can implement some of those events like start, like stop, like run, that will be invoked by Windows Azure whenever that machine instance for that role starts up or shuts down or gets into an execution-based model. So these worker roles are great for a lot of key scenarios. So for example, let's say I want to listen to a queue and receive in messages and other data, and at that point, that's when I want to go take action on that. Maybe I want to have some work that executes on a scheduled basis. It kicks off based on a timer. Or other kinds of input. That's a great model as well. Maybe I'm aggregating data from a bunch of different sources on the internet or working with data that's been uploaded out to our storage environment and I'm consolidating that. It's great stuff to go run in the background and asynchronously from any HTTP-based traffic I may have. Then there's web roles. And web roles are really designed for HTTP-based workloads. I mentioned ASP.NET pages, PHP apps, situations where I'm building like a REST-based service. I'm exposing to a device front end. They're effectively a more advanced worker role. What we have in web roles as well is IIS is installed and configured. And so by default, when you use a web role, we'll go and turn on all the IIS settings for you, deploy your content to IIS, and configure that as needed, like you saw when I remoted into that machine. So those are the two different role types you should think about. These are often used together. So, you know, as you build, for example, front-end web-based applications, there's work that you need to do in response to incoming user requests. There's often work you have to do that you could go and run in the background. And by doing so and kind of combining these things together with queuing in the middle that's provided through our storage system, you can build some really scalable applications. Applications where, you know, you're scaling out that back-end processing through a worker role model. So you see here on this diagram kind of how those two roles would work together. And we use oftentimes storage, in particular queues, for handling some of that communication between those roles. We'll talk a little bit more later today about storage and drill into how you use queue storage as well. I'm sorry, load balancer. Yep. So with that, let me go ahead and show you just a really quick example of a worker role. So I'm going to flip over here to IE and launch another tab here. And I'm just going to browse out to a very simple application I have here running out in the cloud, which I call Fluffy Photos. This is a very simple photo sharing app where I can go upload photos. Those photos get displayed out as part of the web experience so other people can browse through them. But also behind the scenes, actually using worker roles to convert some of these photos that are uploaded into different sized images and convert them into thumbnail images. So Bruno showed a few pictures of his kid, though. I also want to make sure I had an excuse to show a few of my five boys here. So what I'm going to do here is just do an upload. I'll just browse out to a photo, and let me see here if I actually have another. Yep, there's a picture of three of my boys, and I'll call this three boys, kids, family, enter some simple metadata, and hit submit. And so very simple app, ASP.MVC application, uploaded some of that photo information. And then actually what we're doing in the background is that photo is coming in, storing the metadata for that photo into the table storage system, which you'll see how that works a little bit later today, taking that photo itself and putting it into the blob storage environment, and then sending a message to a queue. And that message, the message of the queue is really the important thing I want to focus on here. That message of the queue is actually being received by a worker role that's running in the background. And it's picking up that message, and it's actually doing the conversion of our photo as well. And so if I go back over to home here, I should be able to just drill into albums. Doesn't look like it's been, there it is. Yep, and so there's my thumbnail-based image that's been generated by my worker role behind the scenes. So let me show you kind of what the code looks like for a worker role here. So here I have this Fluffy Photos app, and you'll notice here, just like before, I have a cloud service project. In this case, you see not only do I have a web role, my front end, I have the worker role itself. And this is really just defining the relationship between my code and the metadata that I see here visually in the Solution Explorer tree. So here's my front-end web-based application. And then right down below, I have this worker role. And just one simple class, workerrole.cs, that I have open here. And this particular class, if I scroll up here, you notice this particular class implements a base class, role entry point. And what that allows it to do is actually get invoked by Windows Azure behind the scenes, what we refer to as the Windows Azure Fabric, and know about key events that are occurring. So, for example, if I go to OnStart, or in this case, I'll go to Run, you'll notice this is the code that I have running in the background in this worker role. Sleeping for a time interval here that's configurable in our cloud service configuration. And once I wake up out of sleep, I actually pull a message off a queue. I take that message, take a look at the information for the message, in particular, which queue name did that come in on. And if it was from our photo queue, then I just execute some code here to actually generate a thumbnail and drop it back into storage. And so you can see here just a quick example of how I can run some code in the background, implement a few methods for a worker role, and just have some of that code do various things like listen to queue messages, or it could be even aggregating data from other sources as well. We'll drill a lot more into storage, as I mentioned, in the next session, but I want to show you a few of those concepts around roles. So let's talk a little bit about instance sizes. So with the platform today, we expose five different sizes of compute instances you can go and run. As you can imagine, not all workloads, even web-based workloads or back-end worker roles, are all the same. In some cases, you may want more memory. In some cases, you may want less. You may want more I/O capacity on the network side. You may actually want multiple cores. And that's why we have five different sizes with different price points as well, where you pay for the actual compute hours that are consumed for your application. And so what you see here is these five different sizes. They range from really a part of a core, so a one gigahertz CPU, all the way up to 8 cores that you can use for your app. So you think about if I was running a worker role, maybe an encoding job where I'm doing some encoding of videos and other images, I may want some additional cores to really have a more scaled out, higher performance application. And so I have the option to select extra large there in that case. Some key considerations to think about for compute instance size. You have the natural tendency, as a developer, to always want the fastest and biggest machine. You don't always need it, right? And so one thing to really think about is instead of just kind of throwing the biggest hardware at a problem in the cloud, is how could I get by with lower cost instances and run more of those instances in a scaled out kind of architecture, right? So we see oftentimes as people are architecting apps to the cloud, moving towards small or extra small based instances and running lots of them as opposed to extra large based instances. Couple other considerations is that some scenarios will benefit from multiple cores, especially where you are doing things in parallel, where you have code that's explicitly is multi-core aware. You can go take advantage of that as well. And the other key consideration is just memory usage. So if you are running things that are in the background or you're doing a lot of local in-instance caching, you may want to take advantage of memory resources as well. So that's the kind of the overall compute instance size. Other settings that you should really think about and be aware of as you start building the applications include things like the operating system. So by default, when I created that new cloud service application, it actually used Server 2008 SP2. You can go and change that to use R2. And you can also specify how you want Windows Azure to manage the underlying operating system. Let me actually just drop back into the to the portal experience and show you that really quick. You can see here I have my my deployment from earlier, and I can go ahead and select Configure OS. So you notice in this one I actually had 2008 R2 that was specified. I specified that with my service configuration when I did the deployment. But even after it's deployed, I can go change that to 2008 SP2, and I can specify how I want OS versioning to be managed. So by default, that's automatic, whereas whenever Microsoft has a security update, we'll go and apply that security update to the underlying base virtual machines, and then we'll go and upgrade your applications by bringing up your application on new instances that are running all of those security updates. However, maybe there's a case where you want to pin down your app to a very specific OS configuration with very specific security patches. In that case, you could actually just pin it to a specific instance here, either through the portal or as part of the service configuration before you do the deployment. And so each of these instances are defined out on the Windows Azure site in terms of what they include, but that's a good example as well of how we're managing a lot of the underlying operating system and the infrastructure for you with Windows Azure. So some of the other settings, let me come back to the questions a little bit if you don't mind. Some of the other settings to be aware of, I mentioned config settings, think about name value pairs that I may want to capture across all of my Windows Azure roles and code. And so, of course, we have web.config today. That's great for web-based applications. But you got to really think about cases where I actually want some of the settings to take effect globally across all the instances I may be running. As you can capture configuration settings, as you see in the example here. Defining endpoints. Like, for example, I want to allow a specific port to be opened that you can access your application from. And then doing things like startup tasks. So the question came up a little bit earlier around the size of a service package. One of the things you can actually do is include other frameworks, other components as part of your service package and run startup tasks. What these startup tasks do is they allow you to kind of customize and configure that virtual machine instance as it's starting up. So, for example, let's say you wanted to go turn on or off different Windows services. Maybe you wanted to go and do things like, write some entries to the event log. Maybe you wanted to go and install a third-party component or change registry settings or access the file system at startup. Those are all of the things that you could go do, either through an executable or through a script, like a PowerShell script or a batch file, and you just register it as a startup task as part of your cloud service definition. So that means when Windows Azure takes your service package, takes your definition information, it's actually going to go run those startup tasks for you and manage that. And so one of the examples I want to use here to show that is actually running PHP. And so with PHP and Windows Azure, we don't have PHP installed by default. Of course, we have IIS, which can run and host the PHP runtime, but we don't actually have the PHP executable that's included there. And so that's something that you would want to bring with your application as you go and deploy it out to the cloud. So one option is just include the PHP executable as part of my app, my service package. Another thing is, well, what if I actually pulled it down off the internet? How many people in here have used WebPI or the Web Platform Installer? No one at all? A few hands? Okay. So Web Platform Installer is something we have for making available, like, new IIS resources, Visual Studio tools, even the Windows Azure SDK itself is available through the Web Platform Installer. And what I want to show you here is actually how you can use the WebPI to dynamically pull down the PHP runtime and install it as part of Windows Azure instance as you do a deployment. So what I'm going to do here is actually switch over to another directory, demos, and I'll navigate here to my directory here. And what I have here is a directory with my PHP app. If I drill into this folder here, you can see I have info.php. If I open that up, you'll see I'm just doing a very simple PHP info. This is about the extent of my PHP coding skills. But you can see a very simple PHP info here with my PHP page. And I have that in a directory here for my web role. I also have an index.html and some other resources. In my bin, I have a command file here. Let me just go ahead and crank up the font on Notepad here, since I already have that loaded, so you can see this. And this is actually what I want to have run at the startup of my role. This is my script. And in the script, you can see I'm going to go use WebPI on a command line. I'm going to tell it I want to install PHP. And I'm also turning on and off some other Windows services in the background. So I'm going to go run the WebPI on the command line, and I'm specifying I want to install PHP. If I go over to assets, you'll see I have, including that WebPI command line executable, and a few other assemblies are required for WebPI. And so the way this comes together is if I go back and take a look at my cloud service definition, again, those core concepts we talked about earlier. And what you see here is not only do I have my service itself, I have my role for my PHP web role. I'm specifying I want to allow HTTP-based traffic, but I also have this startup task. And with this startup task, I'm saying at the startup of our instance, go run my script. My script is going to go out to Web Platform Installer, pull in the PHP runtime, and it's going to actually install it and lay it down on that machine. And so you really think about this startup task as being a great way to customize those instances without having to go down to the infrastructure level. I can just script and kind of automate different things. So how would I actually go package this up? Well, if I'm a real PHP developer, I'm probably not using Visual Studio, right? That would be a little awkward. And so what we've done is we've taken a lot of the things that you saw kind of behind the scenes of Visual Studio of packaging up our cloud service package, and we exposed those through some simple command line utilities. And so what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to launch the SDK command prompt for Windows Azure. I'll just go into the bin directory here, and I'm just going to set some environmental variables for my packaging. Let me navigate to this path here. So I'm in this content directory here. And you'll notice I have a few different scripts here. So I'm first going to just run this utility called CSPAC, and I'm going to give it my cloud service definition. It's going to generate that initial package that I would need for deployment. So let me go ahead and just run that here and delete some of the existing files here. So you can see the output from here. So I'm going to run build. Oh. So I'm going to run build here, and it's actually going to assemble the files that we need, our startup task. It's going to assemble the WebPI command line, our CSDef. It's going to drop those all into this directory that you see here, pack and deploy.csx. I'm going to run another script here that'll actually do the packaging. And so when I do that, it's going to take that CSX directory, and it's going to generate my cloud service package for me. And so at this point, I have the two files that I need to go do a deployment out to Windows Azure. And I haven't gone into Visual Studio at all for my PHP application. Of course, if I was a whiz-bang developer at PHP, drop in a Notepad or Sublime Text tool here, add some more PHP code, and continue to build out my website. So I won't take the time to go through the deployment steps, because you've already seen those. And they're the same. They're the same what you saw for the Visual Studio output package, as this package that contains my PHP app. But I will take a minute here to go out and show you kind of the results once that application be started up. So let me go ahead and find my PHP demo here. My mouse is jumping around a little bit. Find my PHP demo here. And here you can see I have two instances that are running for my PHP app. Basically, I've deployed this cloud service package. Let me just browse out to jamesconphpcloudapp.net. Now, what was that page I had? I forgot the page name. Info.php. So let me just go ahead and type in info.php. And there you can see just kind of a typical PHP info where I'm getting the output information about the PHP environment. And again, this is PHP running inside of Windows Azure. And I did all this through just a startup task to automate that installation process. So pretty cool. Great question. I would be a little cautious of saying any other, right? But when you think about other frameworks, like let's say there's a data access framework I want to go use, or third-party control I want to use for the ASP.NET side. Yeah, I could certainly go do that installation through that model. In fact, if you go look at WebPI, anything you see there in WebPI, like IIS settings and other modules, you could certainly use the same approach and just specify step PHP. I want a different component coming through WebPI, and that's a great model. We see people doing things like turning on different performance counters as well through startup task. So there's a wide variety of things you can go do. I want to be careful saying you can go do everything because there's obviously going to be some third-party packages out there, applications, or maybe database systems that really won't function right within a kind of a Windows Azure environment. So, but it's something you could certainly go explore. So I know we're... Oh, question here?
No, I was going to just make sure that if you have a question, please request it. Oh, right?
Thanks.
That way we get it heard by everybody.
Thank you. Forgot about that. So let me just touch on a couple other things here, and I'm happy to hang around for some additional questions afterwards. I want to make sure you guys understand these core concepts. You saw I did a deployment through the portal. We also expose, in addition to the portal, REST-based management interfaces. So everything you saw me do in the portal of creating a deployment, creating a hosted service, I can do all of that through a REST-based service. The reason why that's interesting is I could also go and script and automate it. So if I want to go write my own build and automation scripts where I'm building my PHP application, for example, and I'm automatically deploying that out to Windows Azure, I could script all of that. We have some PowerShell commandlets that are out there that use these APIs. In fact, in Visual Studio itself, we have the ability to right-click on a cloud service project and do a direct deployment from Visual Studio without ever going out to the portal, and we use those same exact APIs. And so this is a good example of a way you can think about you getting access to the platform for a variety of different scenarios for service management. We have some great hands-on labs that go through that as well. You saw in the list when I did the deployment, there were 6 different data centers. There are also a few options where I could specify anywhere in the U.S., anywhere in Europe kind of thing. These data centers are based in 3 different regions. North America, Europe, as well as Asia. And so what I can do is actually do a deployment into a specific data center. But key thing to think about, and Wade's going to talk about this a little bit later, I could also do a deployment of my app into multiple data centers. So same way I deploy, for example, our Hello Windows Azure campsite into North Central in the U.S., I can take that same service package, that same configuration, and go deploy it out over into North Europe as well. And what Wade will show you a little bit later and talk about is that there's even capabilities, what we refer to like traffic manager, where we can do load balancing across those data centers. It's neat about delivering those highly available, highly performant applications. This is really key. I'll skip on VIP swapping because I think we'll touch on it a little bit just for the sake of time. I do want to introduce a few of the other services, and we'll dig into these later today too. In addition to the core compute, storage, and database, there are often cases where you need to build very high performant, very high scalable, as well as secure applications. And so one of the services we've provided as part of the platform is what we refer to as caching. And this is literally how it sounds, is having an in-memory cache where I can store session state information as well as I can store other data in memory and just access it very quickly through .NET-based APIs and use that as part of my application. Another service you'll see a little bit more today is the access control service. Bruno briefly mentioned it earlier. This is a really interesting service where if you are building an app that needs to have the ability for users to log in with a Live ID or a Google account or a Facebook account or maybe even their Active Directory domain credentials, what ACS does is it allows you to just program against the access control service and then configure how it interfaces with those other identity providers. In fact, you could even introduce and surface up in your apps the ability for users to log in with multiple identity providers where you just program against ACS. And this is a service where, of course, I could use it with my apps I'm running out in Windows Azure. I can also use it from what we refer to as code FAR, or where I have code that maybe is running in my own data center, or maybe even code that's running on a device like this. It's a great example of kind of the mix and match principle we talked about earlier. Another final building block service is a service bus. And the service bus is really designed for connectivity. Connectivity and messaging that occurs either within Windows Azure or across different network and firewall boundaries. So if you want to start building what they kind of refer to as these hybrid apps in a cloud, where maybe some tier of your app is in your own data center, some tier of your app is in a hosting provider, some portion of your application is out in Windows Azure, this is a great way of bringing together those components as well, exchanging messages in a reliable and consistent way. Roger will touch on this a little bit later, but there's a couple other services to think about around data, in particular around reporting and data sync. With reporting, we're taking our SQL Server reporting engine, and we're delivering that as a service in the cloud. So you can build reports, deploy those reports out to the cloud, and execute those reports either within the browser or embedded as part of your application. So an example where, you could think about just installing a report engine, maybe through a startup task as part of your Windows Azure apps, or you could use a turnkey service where you can configure and program against that service. We also just a couple weeks ago announced a new customer technology preview, or CTP, of the data sync service. So where you have data in your local SQL Server environment or in multiple SQL Azure environments, you want to have that data synchronized, is a service you can turn on and configure to enable that. So we've talked about quite a few really important concepts today. We kind of answered the quick question of what is Windows Azure without getting into all of the cloud philosophy and terminology and that you see kind of randomly coming across the press and the blogs these days. And saw how you can quickly build your first application using Visual Studio, the SDK, and the tools, the latest versions of those, and go through the process of deploying and running that application in the cloud. You saw a lot of the key concepts. You have introduced some of these terms that you'll hear throughout the day, like services or hosted services, like roles, role types, instances. You saw how you could even do things like go and run PHP out in Windows Azure as well and do all the packaging and everything on the command line. And I started introducing some of the different building block and data services that you can also think about as part of the cloud as well. And this is really where, personally, I get the most excited. It's going beyond just compute, storage, and database, where there's a world of just all of these different types of services I can turn on and write code against. And so we're pretty excited about how the platform has evolved and love to get your feedback over the next 2 days. I know we have a lot of more exciting content, but hopefully this gives you kind of the ground basis for getting started with the platform. So with that, I'll go ahead and I think Wade's on the agenda next, so ask him to come up. And Bruno, do we have a break time here? At 11, okay. Well, I'll ask Wade to come on up then. And as Wade's getting set up here, maybe if there's one question here, we just got to make sure we use the mic. Oh, multiple questions. Well, geez. Wade, you get a pick. I don't want to be the bad guy here. No. First question. Who had the first one? Okay, I'll take two, I guess. Here. Mike.
So that's the remote desktop ability to get into. So that was, by the way, something new I learned today.
Cool.
Why go through all this API, REST API, or an admin console to go and create and publish your web application if you can just go remote desktop and just use the way you deploy your on-prem applications?
So when I remoted in, I assume you have a mic there. When I remoted into a specific machine instance. When I did the deployment of the cloud service package, you had to keep in mind that if I had maybe 50 instances that were specified in my configuration, Windows Azure is going to do the automation of bringing up each of those instances and doing the deployment for me, right? And so fundamentally what we want to get into a model where you don't have to worry about doing an actual remote into a machine and configuration at that level, copying files across RDP or copying files across FTP, where you can get things to be much, much more automated. And because of that, what we can actually do is we can get into much more advanced scenarios where, based on the health of your machines or as you apply upgrades, we're actually taking different instances down but still keeping your application highly available. There's a lot more advanced scenarios that we can get into by up-leveling how we deploy and run those applications.
Okay, that a follow-up to that is it possible to deploy an application once I get into the VM instance?
So it's entirely possible to go make changes inside of that instance. The key thing to keep in mind is that if, for some reason, we were to go, like you had automatic set for VM, for the OS updates, that means we're going to take down that machine instance at some point and bring up a new one for you that contains those latest updates. And so if you did those changes through RDP, it's likely you're going to lose those changes. And that's really where startup tasks come in, is that it's run automatically whenever we bring up another instance.